With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. Have you ever actually looked at the label on your dog's food? Most dog food labels are a long list of things that don't look like food. Powders, starches, additives used to hold ultra-processed kibble together. At We Feed Raw, the label looks very different. High-quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, complete and balanced nutrition formulated by PhD nutrition experts. No fillers, no artificial preservatives, just real ingredients that support your dog's whole body health. That's why many pet parents see real changes after switching to We Feed Raw's fresh meals. If you want to feed your dog one of the healthiest diets possible, We Feed Raw makes it simple. Right now, new customers can get 40% off their starter box plus free shipping. Visit We Feed Raw at wefeedraw.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. This is Rachel Yucatel, your host. Thank you so much for listening to part one. If you haven't listened to part one, please do so, because this is part two of my amazing interview with New York vegan restaurateur Sarma Melganalis from Pure Food and Wine, which had become the number one spot for celeb spotting and delicious vegan food. Sarma is known as a very smart, capable woman who was the face of this business. You couldn't go in there without seeing her. A lot of people would travel from all over the country to meet her. She's a beautiful blonde. Eventually, Sarma married this sketchy guy, Anthony Strangis, a.k.a. Shane Fox, who for several years claimed he worked in special ops and said he had special powers, giving him the ability to secure a passage for Sarma to find Utopia and where her dog would live forever. I know this sounds crazy, but this is what really happened. Sarma ended up transferring almost $2 million from her business accounts at Pure Food and Wine and One Lucky Duck into her personal accounts to give it to this guy, Anthony. Draining the business of all the money and unable to pay employees, workers ended up walking out twice in protest. Ultimately, Sarma and Anthony ended up serving time in prison at Rikers on charges of fraud, among other things. After watching all four episodes of Bad Vegan, I think audiences really walked away not knowing if Sarma was a con artist or if she had just like fallen for the wrong dude and had a bad picker and was so psychologically abused that she lost her way. Well, Sarma is here today to tell her side of the story. She has a lot to say.
We are separating one interview into two parts because the conversation was just flowing. It was so good.
I'm so excited to have her on our show, and you definitely should make sure that you watch Bad Vegan so that you know a lot of, you know, what we're talking about, but I'm going to make sure that she goes through the whole scenario to give you guys an idea, if you've missed it, what we're talking about. But her story is so unbelievable, and I think she's the perfect guest for Misunderstood because she's someone whose story was narrated by the media, and she has not really had a chance to tell her side in her words.
Today, we are releasing part two. Make sure you listen to both.
So check this out. I hope you like it. And I'm so excited that Sarma decided to come on to Misunderstood.
So your staff walks out and you finally find out. And they obviously...
And then I came back.
But now your credibility is getting ruined in the tabloids because now... The news has picked this up, that this, you know, celeb, you know, driven restaurant is closing, and it's because their employees are not getting paid, and, you know, they are attributing it to you, right? So, you know, and this happened twice. So how did that make you feel? How did you react to your employees? Because in the Netflix docuseries, it makes it seem like they tried to talk to you over and over and you just didn't want to hear it. And the people that did confront you, you would fire or Mr. Fox would fire. What's your thought on that?
Well, a lot of, you know, I've had to go back and kind of look at, you know, emails and things. And sometimes, like, I would go back and read, you know, I'd search through my email, not the ones with Mr. Fox because he deleted those, but maybe with some of the employees, some of the people that work there. And I would read them and just, like, be like, ugh. You know, like, it's like reading myself in a sort of, like, as if I had some of that delusion, you know? And, you know, when I've written in my book about specifically that time when I found out it closed and I had to fly back and walk into the closed restaurant, it was like, it's like it was so devastating that I was kind of numb and also already in this sort of like compromise, like, quasi or actually very dissociated state. And so I was very fixated on like, get it back open, get it back open.
And you were able to, even in a position of being someone who was trashed in the paper, you were able to raise another $800,000 or so dollars from investors. How did you even do that?
Because people believed in the concept.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I was raising that money, I was like, I'm trying to get this restaurant back open. And I just wanted, you know, I wanted good people invested. And like, it was very confusing because here's Mr. Fox acting like as if this is almost like a test or something. And he's still feeding me all this bullshit. And I'm just like, I don't know what to believe. All I know is I have to get this restaurant open. Right. And I was exhausted. And I was able to raise a bunch of money. And the vast majority of that money went to reopen the restaurant. All this back rent was owed, all this money, you know, the money the employees got paid back first. You know, there's money was owed to vendors. I made some sales tax payments because the sales tax wasn't getting paid. And so almost like the vast majority of the money that I raised went to pay all the stuff and reopen the restaurant. And then it reopened. And so, you know, one of the things that I sometimes point out when people are like, oh, you were in on it. It's like, why would I have, like, you know, done all this stuff to reopen the restaurant, put all that money into reopening the restaurant, you know, pay sales taxes. I also paid, you know, like I made like a $10,000 payment. One of the loans I'd taken from somebody that I felt really bad about because I'd promised him he would get it back. And it was obviously really late. You know, I made a $10,000 payment towards that. Made some big payments to sales taxes, and then boom, I like disappear. And then, you know, according to the tabloids, we were like on the run. But like, why, you know, if my intention was to like take a bunch of money and run off, why would I be like paying, why would I be paying sales tax?
Yeah.
And then bolt. So.
So in your mind, if you weren't, people have said that you were on the run like Bonnie and Clyde. If you're saying that that wasn't true, what was the case? I mean, at that point, there was no money left. At that point, was that when the employees walked out a second time?
That happened after I was gone. So okay. I didn't know what happened. So one of the things that, you know, once when he took me away.
Were you wondering who's running the restaurant or you thought it was just being run? I mean, obviously, you knew they weren't getting paid.
I didn't know what was happening.
Okay.
Right. And you know, this is where it's like the it'd be great. I actually kind of think how much I would love to talk to a really qualified, like neuroscientist who really understands these things and people who understand about, you know, the way your mind works and the psychology of it. Because it was like that's where I kind of really broke because it was like having gone through all that and reopening the restaurant and then like having it
fail again.
Well, but I didn't – it was like – it wasn't having it fail again because I didn't necessarily know what happened. But it was like him kind of – you know, because he came – he was like, oh, finally, I'm going to buy everybody out, all the people that – I'm going to buy everybody out and it's going to be yours and all the back stuff is going to get paid. So he was like pretending to be somebody – that's where like he pretended to be somebody else because he didn't want to use his real name. And, you know, the
and affected
like the
your
prosecution.
Credibility with Jeffrey Chatterow when he pretended to be someone else and set
right.
up all these
but
meetings.
Like, from my perspective, it was like, well, he's going to pay everybody back. So, mm-hmm. like, who cares what his name is, you know? I didn't think – he wasn't trying to get money out of people as mm-hmm. far as I knew.
Right.
So why would it matter, like, you know, whatever, if he's Donald Duck, if he's going to give them the money yeah. back? You know what I mean? Like, so – I mean, it was obvious. It was super uncomfortable because I'm like a horrible, like super uncomfortable lying to anybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was like it's almost like as if it was turned into like this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't real life.
Yeah,
it increasingly became like that. And so you know, once he took me away, it was like that was really like a like. I'm in a different reality now.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
And then you guys were gone for about 10 months, right?
Yeah. And the entire.
Did you have Leon, by the way, with you?
So in the beginning, I didn't. So that's another thing. Like, if he got me to, like, you know, if he drove me away mm-hmm. without Leon, like, I had to be really kind of.
Who had Leon at that time?
My mom.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I knew he was with my mom, and I didn't know, like, what we were doing or where we were going or mm-hmm. what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have very, like, fuzzy memories of it. But it was, like, it was sort of devastating, and I didn't really understand it. And he, you know, sort of explained it in this way that, like, really has nothing to do with reality, mm-hmm. right? So now I'm just kind of, like, you know, it's like if you watch some of these stories with where people get pulled into cults or, like, the one that really – one that really affected me, well, two that really affected me most was The Puppet Master,
mm-hmm.
Which was heartbreaking because this woman is gone for a really long time. And you see how, like, broken she is.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the story about the Sarah Lawrence students.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, you know, again, and the one who gets the most kind of broken is, you know, she had, like, a scholarship to – I forget where. She was like at Stanford mm-hmm. Medical School. You know, she was incredibly smart,
yeah.
about to graduate medical school and become a doctor, obviously incredibly bright, and gets her mind completely twisted around mm-hmm. where, you know, she's like a, you know, she's almost behaving like a child, like
right.
a broken child,
right.
right? And this man did that to her and these other Sarah Lawrence students.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much like that. You know,
yeah.
whatever he did to them is very similar because, you know, it's like I wasn't, you know, what happened to her? What happened to that student? How did she turn into that?
Right.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we're faced with tough choices and the path forward isn't always clear. I personally have been through a lot of trying times in my life. Trauma, grief, for example, I think those are universal themes that people can really understand. I lost my fiance, Andy, in 9/11, and the pain was unbearable. Since then, I've gone through other traumas that didn't feel as big, but I still needed to talk to somebody, and having somebody I didn't know that well, but was really good at listening, felt like the right thing to do, and it was so helpful to me. I love that I can have someone to talk to that isn't one of my close friends that I can just confide in and feel like it's between us. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. I signed up for this just the other day. I've already been matched to the most perfect therapist for me. I'm excited because I've already touched base with them and I have my first appointment in a couple days. So I will let you guys know how that goes, but I'm super excited to try this service. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/understood today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/understood. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/understood and get on your way to being your best self.
Yeah, gaslighting can be really debilitating because you don't know what's up and what's down. And then they've completely become in control of you almost and your self-esteem, and they're holding the money sometimes. They're the one in charge. And they, you know, they can really push you down to the point where you don't even know who you are anymore.
Yeah. And you don't know what's real.
Yeah.
And you're completely like dependent on them.
Right.
You know, a lot of times there were so many questions I would get asked and I would be like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
And you answer that a lot in the docuseries. You would say, I don't know, or you weren't
right,
sure.
Because that's like,
as a viewer, I think that was really hard to watch because you're just like, you want to sort of scream at you and be like, Sarma, come on, like, you know better than this, or this is crazy. But, you know, people need to understand that in that situation, you know, people do things for a certain reason. And I think it's important to realize that before meeting him, your life was this restaurant. And there are people that question whether or not, you know, you sort of became a con artist through this, or if you just really met a bad guy who turned your whole life upside down and you lost your way, you know? And I think
that's
the biggest
question. I lost my way.
I lost
my company. He conned my mother, like, you know, burned every bridge, left me owing millions of dollars to all these people, which is
all said and done. How much was it?
Humiliating. Well, I did. This was another. So at the towards the end of the film, they actually I think there's a part where I'm talking about how a friend of mine was like, how much do you owe? And I never wanted to like total it up because it was like, it's just so much money. I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
And I totaled up kind of like everything all in and got to $6 million.
Yeah.
And I laughed when I said that total to my friend because it was just so like, oh, my God. Right. Oh, my God. And just because it was so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But it's so easy for people to think that like, oh, she's laughing. And no,
right.
It's just beyond overwhelming. And what really was intentional and frustrating in Bad Vegan, aside from fucking title Bad Vegan itself and the way it was marketed and all of that, was that I had been sort of told, given the impression, had the understanding that at the end of the film, they were going to say, because it's very like in a regular documentary, right? It's like journalism. It's supposed to be like journalism, right? It's telling a news story based on facts, right? And so in journalism, like if the New York Times does a profile on you, they're not paying you, right? Because that would screw up the ethics. Mm-hmm. So a documentary is supposed to be like that, right? But in this case, you know, when I originally agreed to do it, I said like, well, one way or another, I want to get my staff paid because of all that money that I owed. The amount that the staff, the employees were owed was by far the smallest, like a small percentage of the total, but it weighed the heaviest. And it was the most meaningful to me because a lot of the people that are owed money, like, have a shitload of money. So, yes, it feels horrible, but, like, they're not stressing as much as, you know, maybe one of the, you know, dishwashers who's still owed whatever, $1,000 or whatever it is. So all of that money that was owed to the employees, like, I just wanted to get that paid. I wanted to get that paid. I wanted to get that paid. And so I you know, so when I agreed to participate, I was like, that's what I want. And so I was paid an amount that was pretty much equal to what the employees were owed. Didn't even go into my bank account, went into a lawyer's bank account. From the lawyer's bank account, went into the, you know, the person representing the employees who could then distribute it, right?
So the employees were paid back.
So they were paid in 2020, and it was the very day in March when Cuomo announced that restaurants were shutting down because of COVID.
Oh, my God.
And I felt like, I just felt like I'm glad it didn't take longer because I felt like a lot of them are probably still working in restaurants and now suddenly they might be out of a job.
Yeah.
So for them to be able to at least get word, like the money's this, by the way, this money that you thought you might never get back is here. So you might be out of a job, but at least here's this money back at a time when you might need it. So that felt good. But they were supposed to put at the end of the show, like in a sort of full disclosure way, you know, the employees were all paid back and that I wasn't compensated anything more than that. And again, had they included that, it would have been like, oh, you know, she made sure the employees got paid. She didn't get paid beyond that because one of the things like thrown at me over and over again is, you know, you should pay your employees and like you got rich off this and people just getting the impression that a lot of people thought that like you know, you're in this thing on Netflix, you must be like rolling in money now. And it's like, no, I'm still like freaking out and trying to figure out like what I can do or sell or what, you know, it's just.
And to be clear, you ended up having, you got arrested, you had to go to Rikers, and you still have to pay restitution to this day, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the majority of that money I still owe because, you know, it's not like I could just go wait tables and I'm going to make a dent in $6 million or, you know, even if it's $4 million, even if it's $3 million, whatever it is. It's like, I'm not, how am I going to make a dent in that unless I, you know, kind of think of some things I could do that
make
might
a difference. Yeah.
Grow into something big and have a lot of enough value. So that's been really challenging, is to try to work on those things and kind of like get by at the same time and
work on getting your credibility back, which is always hard when your story has been narrated for you in a way that's taken your credibility.
Exactly. And I thought, like, I didn't expect that. I thought on the other side of this film, first of all, they also interviewed, they spent a whole day interviewing the psychologist who's like the authority on what's called coercive control. So he works exclusively with people and on cases where people, generally women, it happens more often to women, are like severely psychologically abused, manipulated, and very often end up in the criminal justice system. And the criminal justice system doesn't kind of really understand that. So, you know, and I think I was told that he'd said, like, if I'd had anything to do with her case, you know, she never would have gone to jail. And part of the reason why I continue to want to speak out about it is because I hear from other people who, you know, what so many women say, like I hear this all the time, still almost daily, is people who say, I understand, I went through something similar. If you haven't been through it, there's no way to understand it. You can't explain it. And it's so isolating, right? Because very often people end up, their families don't understand, they're mad. I've had lots of people mad at me because they didn't understand. So that's part of why, you know, it's like, that's why I'm here now. This friend of mine was like, why are you doing a podcast? You don't have a book to sell. I'm like, because I feel like if it's going to help somebody, you know, if it's going to help somebody recognize, like, you know, my sister's boyfriend is really kind of creepy, that guy, you know, like maybe something's going on. If it's going to help somebody, I want to come out and talk about it, you know.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking. And yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
So what would you say to women or men who are in circumstances where they feel like they have lost their way because they are with an individual or in a certain relationship, that that person is just either gaslighting them or, you know, in they are in a position where they don't feel like they can get out and it is affecting their lives, their parenting, their jobs, whatever it is that they have lost some sort of control? What would you say to them?
It's so tragic when people have kids too. So tragic, because very often what they do is, especially if they're older kids, like in Puppet Master, I think they will, like, you know, they'll pull mothers away from their kids, which is horrible. I mean, just really awful stuff. And, you know, and what's so hard for, you know, a child, even an adult child, to understand is that, like, somebody hijacked your mother's brain. That was not her, you know? And so I've heard really devastating stories like that. And I've heard.
But I think that's important what you just said and for people to hear. That's how you feel, right? You feel like your brain was hijacked. It wasn't you. And you were sort of made to do all these things that you normally wouldn't, because of the situation you were in and what you were being told. And am I getting that right?
It's like you're in an alternate reality. It's like you're in a waking nightmare. And that's how I felt. I felt like every day I was waking up into this nightmare. And, you know, it's like I didn't see any way out.
Right.
And I, you know, it's like I didn't know what to believe. I was always confused. I was always exhausted. That's they always keep you exhausted because they have to keep you overwhelmed and exhausted. Because if you start to like, if you get away from them for long enough, and you start to like, and you're well rested, and you start to like think rationally, well, then you're going to start to kind of maybe come to your senses.
Yeah.
But they don't let that happen. They keep you exhausted. Mm-hmm. They keep you overwhelmed. They keep you confused. And
do you feel now that he's out of your life, now that you feel like this is – that part is over and now you're making amends, but do you feel more secure? Do you feel more confident? Do you feel better about the place you're in?
Yeah.
Are you more prepared in case someone else shows up in your life and does that again?
Yes. But what I've told some people is that like it's very common for something like this to happen more than once, which is – seems counterintuitive, but it's like whatever about my personality, you know, and you could say like I'm gullible or naive, and but it's more complicated than that. But there probably is something about me where it's like I'm just not naturally skeptical. I just sort of assume that like people are good and whatever the case is.
Or maybe you're just hoping for something.
And it has, and again, it has nothing to do with intelligence because I've had women. Most of the people that reach out to me that have been through something like this, sometimes, you know, one woman's like, I have a PhD in clinical psychology and I got to a place where I didn't know which way was up, you know, and people who are like are tech entrepreneurs or, you know, their lives were destroyed. I mean, it happens to intelligent, ambitious, you know, entrepreneurial women. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the more accomplished you are, the bigger the takedown. Because for them, I think it's very much like about power. It's not necessarily about money.
Yeah.
And so I also thought that I was sort of immune because A, I'd been through it before. B, when I out on the other side of this, like I had not only did I have no money, I had lost all my belongings. I had no stuff. I had nothing. Mm-hmm. I was obviously in debt. So I thought like, what could somebody get from me? And yet somebody kind of stepped into my life and like did a bunch of damage again, and I feel like holy shit.
Wow.
And so I tell people who are recently on the other side of it to be really careful because it's like you're more vulnerable, not less. You're more vulnerable until you kind of really process it. And I definitely feel like having been through it kind of three times, Mr. Fox was like the big explosive one. I feel like I get it. Eyes wide open. Yeah. I almost feel like kind of a like an expert on it now. And so – but I tell people all the time like to be really, really careful. And it's – what's hard is – you know, I've talked to a lot of people who are, you know, like I've engaged – people reach out to me on like direct message, right? And I've heard from people who – you know, this guy whose mother is in a bad situation. And he sort of – the more he told me about it, I'm like, you know, okay, well – she's saying she's not going to go back to him, but she always does. Yeah, she is. And if she says she's given him some money, it's probably worse than you know. Mm. And she probably feels a huge amount of shame about it and she doesn't want to admit it. And like another woman told me about – she's young, her sister. And the more she told me about this relationship her sister was in, the more I was like my alarms are just screaming. Mm-hmm. And she was worried that her sister – that the guy was going to take her sister out of the country. And my advice, which I was like, I know this sounds extreme and like I'm no authority, like formally, but I would go, you know, I would go steal your passport. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know that sounds extreme, but like in these situations, the way people get out of cults, the way people get out of these situations is some horrible, extreme thing. You know, I know a guy who now is a psychologist who deals with this type of thing, but the only – he got out of the cult because he got in a – he almost died in a car accident, and then he kind of got removed. And in my case, I was arrested, thankfully. Like, I'm so glad that that happened because if I hadn't been arrested, would I have just been gone for years? I mean, that's happened to other people. They're just gone for years.
So that really opened your eyes.
So, I mean, getting arrested physically pulled me out of the situation, you know, and
– and knocked some sense into you probably.
Well, then I was away from him and then all of a sudden like, you know,
could see
I was starting reality. To kind of come to terms with like what was happening. But it was still – I was still like in a very like stunned state for a long time. But, you know, a woman who reached out to me recently who is going to federal prison now in this like heartbreaking situation, just like mine. I don't know the specifics about like precisely what happened, but like, you know, she's being punished now after like having gone through hell. And because the justice system doesn't quite understand it, and they think, you know, like you kind of naively think that like, well, how could I have intended to destroy my own life when I didn't even benefit from it? It's not like I wasn't arrested getting on a plane to Mexico with a bag of cash. Like, I was in a hotel room with this separate rooms with this guy that I clearly like was afraid of. And for what? Like, why would I have destroyed what I had, which had so much potential? And even, you know, in the early times when I met him, we were making all this, we were doing really well. And that's when I like went to Jeffrey Chatterow and gave him a check for $100,000. I was like really happy to start, you know, to be paying him back. Because he'd given me all this leniency when times were hard. He wasn't holding me to our agreement that like I have to pay him this amount every month.
Yeah.
He knew I intended to pay him back. He knew I was working really hard to make everything work. And so when things were turning around and we were doing really well, like 2011, 2012, and I was able to, I was like so happy to be able to go give him these like sizable checks towards that debt. That, you know, I really, if Mr. Fox, you know, it's like, I just want to call him terrible names. But when he, it's like, if he hadn't been in my life, yes, I was overwhelmed, but I could have, like, people were coming, like big companies and people were coming to me, like saying, oh, I want to invest. Like famous people were like, I want to open a restaurant here. I want to invest. I want to invest. But things were just complicated and it was really hard to get it together. And I was just busy, but I could have then, because we were making money, I could have like, I could have made it all work. I could have sorted it out. It's not, it's not like I was so desperate because, you know, the business was failing. It wasn't. It was actually doing really well. It's just that he was then siphoning all the money out, which is just so gross. It's just so gross.
So, okay, just a couple questions to clarify a few things for people. When you guys were finally caught, it was due to Mr. Fox ordering a Domino's pizza, correct?
Yes, which I didn't even know about.
Okay.
So
were you eating the pizza? A lot of people want to know.
I know. No. And like, not only am I saying that, but the officers are like quoted in articles confirming that. And I think they also confirmed it in Bad Vegan. They were so nice. Like, love those guys because you know how some people in law enforcement probably have like seen a lot of stuff. So they sort of intuitively know, like, so they, when they came into that situation, I guess they'd arrested him first. I didn't even know about it because I was in a different room. By that time I had Leon with us. So I was in my room with Leon, and, when they came in, I was just like really stunned and just out of it. And then I was immediately like, what's going to happen to my dog? What's going to happen to my dog? And they were like, well, ma'am, he's going to go to a local shelter. And I was like, he can't be put in a – I was like, please don't take him to the shelter. Oh, my God. That I was completely like upset. And I was like, please don't put him in the shelter. Like he can't go to the shelter. And I was so upset. And he – Leon's such a good dog. He like loves people and he loves like dudes. So I'm sitting here getting arrested and Leon's like jumping around like as if these guys came in there to like play with him, you know? And he's kind of like a dude's dog. He's like sort of a pit bull mix. And so they're like fortunately dog people. And so they kind of very quickly were like, oh, Kevin will take him home. You know, they're like, oh, don't worry. Well, and it was a woman at the hotel who ended up taking him home because they all, the people at the hotel, like they loved Leon.
Yeah. And ultimately your dad came and picked him up.
And then my dad drove all the way to Tennessee. Come to Tennessee. And picked up Leon for me. So you know what else I don't think was in Bad Vegan is, remember the homeless, my friend Anthony, is also unfortunately with the name Anthony, but he had, you know, read in the paper that I was arrested. I think he found out Leon was there. He had a car at the time. Sometimes he has a car. Sometimes he doesn't. He had a, I think he was living in his cars at the time. He had, like, started driving to Tennessee to get Leon.
Yeah, amazing.
And then somehow was, like, I don't know how he reached my dad, but somehow he spoke to my dad, and my dad was like, no, I'm going to get Leon. And so,
he turned around.
He didn't, but that was just so.
Do you still talk to that homeless man?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is he still homeless?
Not at the moment.
Oh, good.
No.
I love hearing that.
Yeah. He's always, you know, sometimes he's not, sometimes he is.
Yeah.
He's always doing different things, but
he's okay. But he's still in your life.
Yeah, he's okay. He's not in New York right now.
Okay.
But, you know, we're in touch.
Good. Yeah. And you still have Leon. How is Leon?
Leon is, he's doing great. Mm-hmm. He did, like, have some alarming issues. He was hospitalized a couple of weeks ago. Which
how old is he now?
Devastating. He's just over 13.
Oh, so wow.
If I assume he was born in March,
yeah,
which was kind of an estimate, but he was young enough when I adopted him that it's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's over 13 years old. And but, I mean, he's in great shape because mm-hmm. I take really good care of him. And people always think that he's younger than he is. Mm-hmm. But he did have some issues and was hospitalized a couple of times a couple of weeks ago, which was really, really rough.
Scary, yeah. But he's okay now.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
Good. And have you made any connections with the people that used to work for you?
Yeah. I mean, we were sort of – a lot of us were connected kind of very quickly mm-hmm. once I was out of
jail.
Because I'd been arrested and then it took a little while because my – you know, it's not like my parents are flush with money. Mm-hmm. So they had to kind of jump through all these hoops to get my very large bail mm-hmm. sorted. So once I got out you know, over time. Also, it was kind of – so then I had to almost like hack back into my own – not hack, but I had to go through hoops with Gmail to mm-hmm. get back into my own email because Mr. Box had been in it the whole time. So I hadn't – the entire time I was gone, like my phone number was gone, but also wasn't in my email at all. Mm-hmm. So when I finally got back into my email, there were a lot of messages from people like, what's going on? You know, where are you? Are you okay? And I remember like searching for, you know, emails with Shane Box because he mm-hmm. used that name for his email, even when I knew his name was something else. And seeing that all those emails were gone, mm-hmm. which was like, oh, and he left one email for me. That was so gross. And then, you know, like he knew what he was doing all
along.
Yeah.
Like he knew that people would end up looking.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then,
to make it seem like you were in on it or you were
exactly it was kind of like, oh, I tried to help you and,
right. Now another question people would want to know is, are you in touch with Mr. Fox, or when was the last time you spoke to him?
It was like one of those recorded phone calls mm-hmm. back when bad, you know, I stayed in touch with him to get those phone calls recorded and whatnot, and then I think I had one call after that with him where I sort of like, you know, well, one thing I want to just go back to is when I was gotten to my email and then, you know, I sort of saw a lot of the emails that had come in and then I went into my sent email folder and like wanted to die when I started looking at what was there.
He had sent emails from you?
He had been writing to people as me mm-hmm. and like wanted to die.
Right.
Because he was writing to Jeffrey. He was writing to Alec Baldwin. He was writing to, you know, a lot of the people that had reached out to me. Are you okay? Where are you? And he would write back to them and be like, yeah, but I really need some money. And it was just like, oh, my. And then a lot of times they would be like, well, where are you? Can I call you? Mm-hmm. Well, I really need to talk to you. And then, like, that conversation would end. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so – and then also in the back and forth with Jeffrey keeps saying, where are – and heartbreaking because Jeffrey was like – clearly trying to help, like, mm-hmm. what's going on? Where are you? And Jeffrey would say, like, well, why can't you call me? And then he would write back as me, like, oh, my phone ran out. Like, really terrible. Like, just excuses or, like, how can you not get to a phone somewhere? So
– have you had the chance to call Alec or text him or call Jeffrey and make, you know, make them understand it wasn't you?
I have spoken to them, and I think in some of those cases, it just took a long time because I knew how bonkers it was mm-hmm. that, you know, it's like me saying, that wasn't me, sounds kind of like they don't even understand what happened, and it was just so bonkers.
And it's hard to say that. It's almost
so many people that like didn't know what happened, were really confused. But, you know, a lot of the former staff, like they knew something terrible happened because they knew me for 10 years in some cases. And they had seen me like, you know, all the stuff I went through when things were hard with the restaurant and all the stuff we all went through together, you know, and sometimes it'd be like a crisis at the restaurant and everybody would pull through. And so it's like, it just didn't make any sense. So even if they didn't understand what happened, they knew like something terrible happened. They just couldn't really wrap their brain around it. So the only ones I think who I might have, you know, on social media had said bad things were like people who hadn't worked there very long. Right. So they didn't really know me. But all of the ones from way back, I mean, you know, I was living in Harlem and just walking down the street one day, I ran into this guy who had been like a busser and then a bartender, and he'd worked there for years. And it's like, if you look up those old pictures of those, like when they were all outside, he's one of those people like holding a sign.
Picketing and saying he was owed money.
And this was like when I was out on bail, and I just ran into him on the street, and like we just immediately hugged and cried. You know, it just, they know. You know, and so so I have been in touch with a lot of them.
Do you have any plans to try and reopen a new restaurant now that you're back, you're living back in New York with Leon?
I did leave the city for a while to try to finish writing my book, and it just felt seemed to make sense to kind of get away. I had a bunch of reasons why I kind of had to leave, but but yeah, I mean, I can't really talk about what I'm working on because nothing's sort of, I can't really talk about it yet, but I'm just in this funny sort of like a bunch of different things that I'm sort of working on that, you know, could repair the damage, which, you know, which I take on as my responsibility because I don't want to walk around like these. I don't care how much money people had, or I just want that money repaid. So again, like I couldn't just kind of, you know, people sometimes are like, oh, why don't you open a food truck, or why don't you do like catering, and I'm like, that's not gonna, I'm not gonna earn $6 million catering.
No, I get
So I just kind of have to do these various projects, which you know, could grow into something to, you know, return
the money. So you're concerned more about returning the money, but because you are such a figure in the restaurant business and in the vegan restaurant business, I think a lot of people would wonder if you would ever get back into that. You would.
In the right circumstances, you know. But
And just out of curiosity, are you, how do you eat now? What is your diet? Are you a vegan? Do you eat raw? Do you eat meat?
It's funny because I've been thinking about like the whole vegan label is sort of always kind of, for the most part, put on me because even when early on I was very like raw vegan, I was never like hyper strict, right? Because for me, it was more about, obviously, it was about like health and eating well. It was about not, you know, wanting to contribute to like the animal cruelty of like factory farming. It was about, you know, it's also like factory farming is just environmentally destructive, all these reasons. But, you know, also like I love restaurants and food. And so, you know, sometimes like I would taste something. So I wasn't very strict about it. And in particular, like if something's going to be wasted, you know, like if somebody, like you don't throw away like chicken or something, it's just tragic to me. So either way, it's just, I don't have any like hard, strict rules about it. And I felt like, you know, and there's also a lot of like, I actually don't have an issue with like hunting if you kind of go out into the woods and, you know, if you were to like shoot a deer, drag it home, eat the whole thing or whatever, that's kind of in the, like, animals kill other animals. You know, you watch those nature specials. It's like heartbreaking when, you know, the gazelle gets eaten by the tiger. You're like, oh my God. But it happens. And like that animal lived free until that very moment. Right. So that's kind of nature. Like, I don't philosophically have a problem with that or ethically have a problem with that. Obviously, hunting, if you're doing it like some people do, where they go trophy hunting wild animals and they think they're big and tough, that's, and they pose with the animal, like that's just grotesque and horrible. But, and so I always felt like my lane was, you know, what we did was in a very, like, the opposite. It was not preachy. So if you walked, when you walked into Pure Food and Wine, you would have no idea that it was a vegan restaurant. You know, it just didn't have that vibe. There wasn't like, I don't know what would be a typical vegan restaurant, but if you walked in, there's like no clues that it's a vegan restaurant. So actually, hilariously, sometimes people did walk in off the street like, oh, look at this beautiful space.
Right. And like, let me get a burger.
Or whatever. But they just thought, you know, and they would sort of, they'd figure it out.
Yeah.
But I always felt like my lane was to kind of represent like a shift, right? So it's not about the label. Especially nowadays, it's like everybody's so polarized. Like, are you on team this or team that? Are you red? Are you blue? Are you this? Are you that? Like, why does it have to be one or the other? And so I kind of feel that way a little bit about the vegan label. Like, and it also puts people off very often. You know, they think like, cause sometimes you hear people, oh, I tried going vegan, but I couldn't. So like, fuck it. Now I'm eating everything again.
Right.
Like, if everybody just shifted to eating way less meat, and if everybody shifted away from factory farming, and, you know, if we could shift away from it, that would make a huge, meaningful impact in the world, as opposed to kind of trying to, like, you know, browbeat everybody into, like, you must go vegan, and, like, shaming everybody into it. Like, that's not, you know, there is a place for those sort of hardcore protests, you know, and I understand that. Like, sometimes I've, you know, I could get sort of outraged and want to like cover myself in blood and lay on styrofoam like I'm a, you know, I don't, those protests that are, I understand that, but that's not, that's kind of not my lane.
Yeah.
And I'm not that strict. And like Leon's not vegan. You know, he gets eggs from the green market. Sometimes I eat some eggs. Like I just am not that, I'm not that strict about it. And also, like, I just think everybody's different. So from a nutrition standpoint, some people do great being vegan their whole lives.
Yeah.
Some people don't. Some people need to adjust. Some people need to work on different supplements. Some people need to, you know, it's just everybody's different. And I think it it really depends. So I'm not super strict myself.
Okay.
But I do very much, you know, very much stand by, like, eating unprocessed foods, way more plant foods. You know, if you can eat almost all plant foods, that's great. If you want to still eat some other stuff, ideally it's like, you know, something from a small farm.
But, yeah.
You know, the whole system is messed up. It's like subsidies screw everything up. Because why is, you know, tragically, like our food was super expensive, which I don't like that. It sucks. But it sucks that a lemon and an avocado are like more than, that costs more than, you know, a Big Mac or all this kind of crappy food. Why is that? It's like subsidies. Why is that? Because those industries have a lot of money and power. Why is that? Because there's money in politics. If we could just unwind Citizens United and kind of pull money out of politics, you could start to fix a lot of problems. But now we're getting really like macro.
Right. So my last question for you is, what do you think is most misunderstood about you? Or another way to word it is, what do you want people to really know about you? What do you want your sort of legacy going forward to be? Obviously, what you went through was something that happened. It doesn't define you. You know, I saw a text that, or a, you know, something that somebody had written to you in your on your website in response to your letter that you wrote, which I thought was great, and I sent to you about, you know, you are so much more than what happened to you, essentially. And I think that that's so true. So, what would you say is something you want people to know about you? Or clarify, you know, in this last minute?
Well, it's like, I think more about what I would want people to know that's useful for them, as opposed to like, people can think what they want about me. Like, yeah, it sucks if they think terrible things. And it sucks, you know, like all these things about Bad Vegan were upsetting. More, yes, it's upsetting for people to call me names. and not understand who I am and all of that. And also because it impacts what I can do going forward. If people like, you know, like a agent or a publisher, like, it's like, I don't know, she might be cuckoo given what happened, you know? So I'm more concerned with like wanting people to understand that even if it's really hard to understand what happened, that like this is a thing that happens and happens to, you know, intelligent people, happens way more than people think because, you know, I don't know the total, but just so many, mostly women, sometimes men, have written to me and have been through eerily similar mind-bending experiences. They're just not so public.
Mm-hmm. And right? When you say this, just to clarify, you mean people who are psychologically abused?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And abused in other ways too, which was another thing they left out of Bad Vegan, was like there was all this like really gnarly sexual abuse, which I was asked about. And, you know, I was told by somebody who was there that like, oh, it's really, you know, because I was like, oh, that's, I was probably like ugly crying. And it was really like hard to talk about. And somebody said, who was there said like, you know, that was so compelling, you know, and all along I was like, I don't care if I'm embarrassed or if I'm ugly crying. I just want it to be useful.
Yeah.
So I felt like the biggest place where that series failed was allowing people to be confused, allowing people to come away and not understand how it happens. Mm-hmm. And that this is not like I'm a cuckoo person or possibly a criminal and like, isn't this crazy and bonkers? But like, no, no, this is a thing that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And like, maybe pay attention to, you know, your sister, your mom, your friend, anybody.
Yeah.
Because what happens on the other side of it is now it's like you almost have like a radar spidey sense for it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I'll see people sometimes and I'm like, you get a vibe. And also just, you know, if nothing else, it makes, I've heard so many women say to me that like they feel less alone. They feel less stupid, you know, because again, people think they just, whatever.
They think it's only happening to me and it's too embarrassing to talk about. But when they hear you talk, they'll know.
And the people in their small orbit, because it's not like this big public story, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they've been punished for it. Like this woman I know who's waiting to go to federal mm-hmm. prison, which is heartbreaking. I want to try to help get her out early or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everybody's blaming you or they don't understand. And it's just such an icky feeling. And she said to me what everybody says, which is like, it feels impossible to explain. And I can't even think about it very long because it's like, it's just, it's even hard for when it happens to you, it's like, not only can other people not understand, you kind of can't understand.
Yeah.
Which is like, if your brain is kind of hijacked and manipulated, like by definition, you wouldn't understand how that happened.
Yeah.
Until like, I understand much better now because I've just spent these like years reading, mm-hmm. you know, watching other stories, hearing other stories, investigating cult psychology, mm-hmm. you know, becoming friendly with people who've been in cults, understanding how they were manipulated because it's very similar. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point where you feel like, you know, are these people all like using the same how-to manual? Because mm-hmm. the tactics are like eerily similar. And these personalities are eerily similar. So Mr. Fox, Keith Raniere of NXIVM, mm-hmm. Larry Ray from the Sarah Lawrence story, you know, even the people like, you know, like Jeffrey Epstein, I kind of got very interested reading, you know, listening to all of that stuff. And he's got all those characteristics. Mm-hmm. And you hear the same things about them. Like, you know, the people, like, how come this person gave him so much money? And they'll say like, well, it was like he was under a spell. Mm-hmm. You always hear that. It's like she's under a spell. That's very common. And because I think that's actually part of it. I think part of the reason why I don't remember our conversations when we were together is people said that about that guy, Keith Raniere. They'd be like, well, I talked to him for 2 hours and I don't remember.
Yeah.
Because there are ways to like, you know, do things that are, you know, it's like something called neuro-linguistic programming. You know, there's a lot of ways to manipulate people.
And also, I think it's really hard for people that have been in cults or in situations like yours, because you don't have physical signs to sort of give people, you know, to say, see, look, I have a bruise here. Look, he stabbed me. Or, you know, it's invisible, right? And it's just how you feel. And so the fear is people won't believe you. People won't understand you. You know, I went to a therapeutic boarding school that was based on the Synanon cult, and it was a very similar thing. And at some point, you know, after my father died there, I just resigned to be like, well, I've got to get through this, so I better go along with
right.
it.
Right. You and just kind of give in. It's like you give up.
You're and
like,
you almost – it's not like I liked it, but it's like once you give in to it, it's easier to get through. And you know there's no way out kind of, so you just go along with it. And it didn't occur to me, and I didn't find out for, you know, almost 15 years that it was a cult, you know. And it was – and then it all made sense, but it takes time, and it's really scary when you're in it because you can't scream for help because people are like, this is like crying wolf. What's wrong with you? Everything seems fine. He seems so great. We really liked him. He's so personal. Maybe it's you, you know.
Right. And then also like and again, like hearing you talk about that in that episode, which was heartbreaking, you know, I knew that you would at least – you would understand at least like the kind of mind manipulation part.
Of course.
And when people don't believe you and they don't understand what's going on. And part of what they do is like you feel like you're going – you kind of feel like you've gone crazy in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your mind is kind of – broken in a way.
And you have no center. You don't know. You can't even like stand up for yourself because you don't even know what you're standing up for almost, you know?
Yeah. And also it's like you don't see a way out.
Yeah.
It's like you're trapped. Mm-hmm. And you're trapped in a way that other people can't see.
Yeah.
Because again, why didn't you call the police? Right. You know? And anybody that's been in one of these situations, they would never ask that question.
Right.
Because they know you're trapped. Mm-hmm. You're trapped.
Right.
And I feel like there was something else you asked me that I didn't answer.
But no, you did. I asked you a two-part question, but it was the same question. So people that are listening, if they want to reach out to you, do you read your DMs? Where could they find you? That's a place that they could reach out to you.
Mostly on Instagram.
Yeah.
So like I have Facebook, but I never look at it. And I'm like weirdly half locked. I just don't have time. Like I'm not – it's like people assume that like, oh, you're on, you know, you have a bunch of followers. You must be like rolling in money or I should be – as if I should be able to like monetize it somehow. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like – I'm not really good at social media. I'm not good at making reels and doing all this stuff and kind of, you know. So basically I have Facebook, but I don't really look at it.
Okay.
And I'm actually kind of halfway locked out of it. Like I'm on Twitter also just because I've been on Twitter for a really long time. Instagram is where I kind of have the most interaction. And early on, I couldn't read my DMs because it was just like, you know, just a fire hose.
Yeah.
And to the extent that people wrote really nice messages, I feel bad that I didn't see them.
Yeah.
But what happens sometimes is now that it's like slowed down to at least like I do at least read them all. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, and I try to reply to everybody that kind of says something nice or if I feel like it can be useful. There's a lot of just like dudes that are like, hey, what's up? What are you doing? And I'm like, I don't have time.
Right.
Like, you might be nice, but like I can't.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not going on a date with you.
Like, let me pay your bills. I'm sure you're getting a lot of that. All right. So people can reach you on your Instagram. What's your Instagram handle?
My Instagram handle is my full name, which is very hard to spell, but there's only one of me.
Okay.
So it's like my Twitter is my first name, at Sarma. My Instagram is at Sarma Melngailis with my last name, but it's and Leon has his Instagram too. He's lucky rescue dog.
Right. Where you can catch up on everything going on in Leon's life.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, at some point I will finish my very long book draft. And I hope that, you know, I hope that it'll lead to helping people understand that this is something that happens. And, you know, and again, it's like if you think that somebody you know might be in a situation like this, like – and also if that person's pushing you away, it's like don't let them push you away. Mm-hmm. And kind of if you have a suspicion, just keep checking and keep
don't
pushing
give up
because,
on them.
You know, it's like I like that woman where I said, like, this might sound cuckoo, but I think you should, if I were you, I would steal your sister's passport because she might be furious. That might, maybe that's, you know, however extreme and cuckoo that sounds, like, that's better than your sister getting taken away.
Right. And it might save her life.
She doesn't, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then she doesn't get out of it. And then she's dead. Because again, that also, you know, happens a lot in a lot of cases where women get taken away and then it's like, you know, they wind up dead.
You never see them again.
Or like arrested or, you know, in a horrible accident or something. Because very often it takes something really, really extreme to pull people out.
Right. So I think people will be very excited once your book is finally done and comes out. And I'd love to have you back on when your book is out and we'll talk about that. But thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to hearing what happens in your future.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I knew that having been through what you've been through that you would understand. And I just felt like, again, if I reach some listeners that it helps, then, you know, it's worth it. It feels good.
Absolutely. It is worth it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at 4 things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking. And yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.